This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning. Everyone is at rest this morning. It may not seem like it, but there isn't any reason not to be. You may have very busy or complicated life, but the place of rest is always where you are. You're always at the exact center of your life. And you can't actually depart from there, even if you think you can. So it may look like it's easier to be at rest here, a place like this. But even after you've come here to sit and you, I don't know, go shopping, the center of your life moves with you, always. And that's really the only place of rest there actually is. But our human way seems to be to complicate things. Bless you. Sometimes just because we can. The mind is incredibly creative. Just like we go to the beach or something, and it's enough just to, you know, watch the waves. But sometimes it's fun to pick up shells and little stones and so forth, make a collection. So as a result, our spiritual life tends to there's a foundation of some sort, and then there's often an edifice that piles up. And that's no less true of Buddhism than of any other faith. If you visit the St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, it's quite a remarkable space. I forget whose dome that is. Brunelleschi's dome? Or Michelangelo? Brunelleschi. So there's this magnificent dome with light coming in. There's this huge, huge church for the sake of, I guess, you know, spiritual practice. Of course, it wasn't really necessary. And yet, the mind, the spirit, produces these magnificent outpourings. And in addition to edifices, buildings, there are philosophical edifices too. Some of the great philosophers in the West. Well, I read the other day that the authorities, the scholars, the experts in the Roman Church, have been trying to put together a version of Thomas Aquinas' theology since 1879. They're still not done. So I have to wonder if at some point, you know, like the third generation or so of scholars started to think, is this really going to help anyone if we do this? Because first of all, they have to do it all in Latin, and then they have to translate it into English. So anyway, I wish them luck. This is sort of, this is what the mind, you know, wants to grapple with. And that's okay if we know how to be at rest. So there's, as you may know, there's this apocryphal story that towards the end of his life, Aquinas had some insight. And said, you know, all that stuff I wrote, forget it. But generally, that story is regarded as, you know, a popular myth. Personally, I believe it. So if we were to go visit these scholars laboring away there on Aquinas' philosophy and say, you know what, he just said forget this stuff, they probably wouldn't be too happy. I imagine that he said that because he noticed what it means to be at rest. So in St. Peter's, you know, around that dome, there's this Latin inscription. It says, you know, attributed to Jesus. You are a rock, and on this rock I will build my church. So whether Jesus actually said that or not is some argument, but anyway, there's this, you know, you have the feeling of this huge thing. Millions and millions of Roman Catholics around the world, one hopes that they too come to understand being at rest. Because otherwise, all of the other stuff that goes along with being a Roman Catholic doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And same thing with Buddhism. We have, I don't know, probably a ton and a half of books in our library, and every month more come out. Right? People try to explain various things. So whether, you know, east or west, there is this tension between what you might call the foundation and the edifice. So periodically, someone usually comes along and says, are we getting confused here? Never mind the edifice. Let's remember the foundation. This is usually regarded as kind of a reform movement. And often those movements spring from the monastic world, because if you live that way, it's a little easier to understand what it means to be at rest. The drawback from the maybe from the Buddhist point of view is you may come to think that being at rest depends on being in a monastery. And that is not true. So we have a tremendous edifice of Buddhist philosophy, and when I was in China in April, enormous temples, you know, thronged with people. And at the foundation, something very simple. And of course, some of our Zen stories are about just this tension between the edifice and the foundation. And I grew up in the Roman church, and at some point I started to get the feeling that there are actually two, in a matter of speaking. There's, you might call the Church of Peter, which is the edifice. And then there's the Church of the Heart, which is somewhere down deep. And in Buddhism also, there is millions of words of brilliant philosophy. And then there's also the deep foundation, which we dare not forget. And the reminder of that is encoded in various ways. I think the last time I talked about one of our favorite poems, The Harmony of Difference and Equality. And in that poem, there's the line, when you hear the words, you should understand the source. That teaching is about the foundation, about the place of rest. Recently, I was sitting here the birds outside were chirping along, and I had the thought, hearing the birds, you should understand the source. And the source, once again, is exactly where you are and nowhere else. And there's a certain way of, I'm not sure if it's a way exactly, but one can be at rest in sitting. And I don't know if Dogen would exactly approve of this. This is one of those things you can do while you're sitting. And mostly the instruction is don't do anything, but sometimes it's just so tempting because some stuff is really fun. So for instance, I often sit nowadays and my eyes are barely open, just a couple of millimeters, right? Just to let a little light in. And from this place, the sense is present that everything that arises comes from the source. Everything. Whether you label it me or not me, it all comes from the source. So, you know, that's a teaching that could cause trouble for people, which I hope it won't, but it's also possible to practice with teachings like that in a way that doesn't trip us up. So maybe I shouldn't call it a teaching, just a perspective, you might say. Sitting at the place of rest is sitting at the source. and not only birds, but cars and voices and so forth come from and return to the source. So that's, you know, another pronouncement to trouble your sleep with. And even though we treasure that poem and its many instructions, in Chan or in Zen, usually before too long, there'll be a reminder to hear those words and understand the source. So one of my, looking at one of my favorite stories, featuring Master Ma, who's justly one of the most famous Tang Dynasty teachers. And in China, and maybe in India too, there were people who were known as lecturers. And they would travel around giving talks on Buddha Dharma. And sometimes they would make quite a name for themselves and come to imperial attention and maybe be named as abbot somewhere. And I think there are, you know, there were male and female lecturers. One of them, a fellow named Liang, who came from Mount Xi, wherever that is, he went to visit Master Ma. And he was introduced as a famous lecturer. And so Master Ma said, "Oh, great, what do you teach?" And lecturer Liang says, "Oh, I teach the Heart Sutra." And Ma says, "Oh, how do you teach that?" Liang says, "I teach it with the heart." And Ma said, "Oh, pretty good. So the heart is like the principal actor, and the will is sort of like a supporting actor, and the senses, they're sort of like the orchestra. How do they teach?" And as was frequently the case when speaking with Master Ma, poor lecturer Liang was confused and said, "Well, if the heart doesn't teach it, does emptiness teach it?" Another little philosophical zigzag. And Ma says, "Oh yeah." And lecturer Liang was sort of dumbfounded. So he makes this gesture. It was famous in Chan. He'll go like this. It's like shaking the dust off. And he turns and walks away. And so Ma says, "Oh, lecturer." And Liang turns back. And Ma says, "From birth to death, it's just this. Liang has a great awakening." And it said he returned to Mount Xi, where he was from, and no one heard of him again. So, if you have a great awakening, be careful, because no one may hear of you again. And that's okay. You won't mind. Uh, So here's Master Ma reminding us. Yes, great edifice. And from birth to death, it's just this. Once again, reminding us about the place of rest. So if you think you're not restful enough yet, I would encourage you to abandon that dialogue with yourself and just let that drift away. And trust profoundly that the place of rest is where you are. That has always been so and will always be so. Hearing the voices, understand the source. Okay. Do you have any questions or comments? Yes.
What do you mean by source? What do you mean by source?
Well, that's what I've been talking about. As I said, the source is where you are, where I am, from where everything comes. The whole world comes from the source.
Okay, well then, maybe can you go further on that, from the perspective of emptiness? Would it get too weird?
Not really. That might get too weird. The teaching, of course, goes on to remind us that because phenomena arise the way they do, things are empty. That is, they have no fixed nature. This is pretty basic teaching. And from the perspective of our sitting, our cultivation of stillness, I'd be really interested to hear if anybody has noticed any fixed natures anywhere. And if you have, especially if you've noticed a fixed nature of your own, I refer you to my teacher, Tenshin Zenki Roshi, over at Green Gulch, who's still offering $10,000 to anyone who can prove the existence of a permanent self. So, you know, by all means, go for it. I haven't asked him recently if he still has that 10,000, but you know, if you're going to make a bet like that, you better have something to back it up. So, another answer to your question is, from birth to death, it's just this.
I'm asking because when you say source, it's sort of implied that there is it. There's something there that it, mm-hmm. it's got its own entity.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
So it's a language.
Yes, it's yet another language trap.
But can one recept it as in spirit?
I wouldn't think that's necessary. You can play with the concept all you want,
okay.
And see what works for you. For me, source is very, you know, it's like one Chinese character, very evocative, as it is. And I kind of don't want to throw anything in there, although that's okay. Anything you throw in there disappears, so. Is there another question? Oh, yes.
I don't know if this is too far away from what you're talking about, but how do you think maybe Sangha integrates into that?
Well, I would say seamlessly, to the degree that we are conversant, you might say, with being at rest, then the boundaries amongst people, amongst beings, get very soft and permeable. And Sangha supports that kind of mutual interaction and study. So there has to be actually that connection. Otherwise, we've lost one of the three jewels, which is not to our benefit. Does that help at all? Yes.
So you mentioned this lecture upon realizing that the source, he went to the mountains and was never heard of.
Yes.
Is there a way to actually be productive in society while realizing the source?
Sure. Yeah. Not everybody does that. For whatever reason, lecturer Liang seems to have kind of done the Pratyeka Buddha thing. He just kind of vanished. That doesn't mean he didn't have any interactions with people, but you know, he might have gone and built a hut somewhere. But usually when that would happen in China, people would eventually hear about it, and then they would come and start bugging the person in the hut for teachings. If that happened, the story doesn't say. But how do we say, always coming from source is a way of being in the world too. And when we interact with people with a deep trust based on some experience, I guess I would say, on that basis, interactions can be very, very helpful. And much less likely to be twisted out of shape by greed, hatred, and confusion. So that is a very good way of being in the world.
If I may ask,
mm-hmm.
You also distinguish between the foundation and the edifice.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have a position on against the edifice versus the foundation?
No, no.
You didn't make any position?
No. I wanted to indicate that there's a kind of a tension there, or a dynamic, and when the edifice kind of loses touch with the foundation, it gets very shaky. And it can fall on people's heads and make them do horrible things, like kill each other. So for that tension to be maintained is fine, but if one side or the other, you know, for instance, if one decides that one needs to abolish all of the edifices, then that's going to cause trouble too. So to acknowledge and move with that tension, that is, maybe caring for the edifice, not forgetting the foundation, that works, I would say. Yes.
I'm feeling really tired right now, and within that tiredness, there is almost a palpable sense of rest, which sort of sounds like an oxymoron, to be tired and at rest.
Mm-mm.
Simultaneously. But also yesterday during my work day, which was rather frantic,
mm-hmm.
busy, stressful, somewhat agitated, a little bit of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and so on, there was definitely not any palpable sense of rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me think that when I'm thinking of rest, I'm attaching something to it.
Could be.
I'm attaching some meaning to the word rest, so that it's restful here, but it's not restful
there.
It's
not frantic, it's not anxious, it's not busy, etc. Is that what you're saying? It's none of
yes,
that other
yes,
stuff.
Yes, my definition or whatever it is you would call it, my sense of rest is not any of those other things. It's like more of a sense of calm or quiet or something like that.
It's the usual meaning. Which is why our cultivation is useful, because it can reveal that the place of rest is accessible no matter what's going on. All one has to do is, I don't know what, trust that that's so, and then stuff just falls away. Even if it takes a while for the body to follow that, because the body's kind of agitated by what's going on, this trust can actually cut through all of that. And if only for a moment, that moment is extremely important. That moment is a pivot where all of this stuff that's going on revolves around a source. And the source is where we are, and the source is a place of rest.
I'm having a little moment of doubt.
Sure. Is it skeptical doubt?
No, I mean, I trust what you're saying. But I'm still wondering about if in the two modes, shall we say, of, you know, calmly sitting, writing a letter to a friend or something, or having some tea, there can be this palpable sense of rest, right? But in the busy, hectic, day-to-day, whatever, there is not a palpable sense of rest. So I'm making a very distinct, you know, separation between those two, and that seems, based on what you just said, seems a little artificial.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm wondering, within that busyness, I mean, when I get like that, when I get sort of all caught up in my day-to-day activities, I'm just caught up in them, you know? And so what I wonder is that palpable sense of rest, is that to be found in there, or is it within just the being busy and caught up in being engaged in your activity, even though it feels a little
this rest I'm talking about isn't palpable in the ordinary sense. And if it, a single moment or time in the midst of a busy work day, you stop and reflect, that is karmically extremely significant. So it's just a matter of a moment of, oh, I trust that. I can't see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, hear it, anything, and I trust it completely. That such moments are the pivots of spiritual life. So even if it doesn't taste like rest, or look like rest, or smell like rest, there is rest. And that is something one comes to trust more and more profoundly as one practices. It does help sometimes to, you know, okay, take a moment. Okay, everybody, take five, you know, and recollect, just sit in stillness, not looking for anything, not trying to get rid of anything. And that profound gesture of trust reflects back in the world. So that's what I try to do, and I have my frantic moments too sometimes, or moments of great discomfort in the midst of a horrible migraine. And it's good to take a moment and recollect or reflect without trying to make anything better or make it worse. Just be where you are. And the more profoundly you trust that, the more that trust comes out in life.
I'm thinking maybe I should wear a rubber band on my wrist, so when I see it, I can go,
yes,
bam!
Yes.
Oh,
Yes, or
this is what's happening.
Get one of those mindfulness things on your phone that rings a bell every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, mindfulness bell.
Okay, time to take 10.
Yeah. Personally, when they started doing that in the Zen Center kitchens, I hated it. It's like, you know, I'd be, you know, you're cutting. Ding! Everybody's like, it's like, oh, it's like, this is so stupid. It's like, this is not necessary. But anyway, people like that stuff, so they did it. And as far as I know, they're still doing it. So it's like, okay, fine. But it's not really necessary. You can do that yourself. And then that, your visit to the source, you know, that's a stupid way to put it, spreads around you without people even being aware of it.
Kind of have to remember that there's something to have faith in.
Something?
To have faith in. Like, it seems to me it's...
Well, see, it's not exactly having faith in something.
Mm.
To simply manifest great trust without a particular target, that's what I'm talking about. That's a way of talking about practice. You're not just like, oh, I trust what that person said or that person did or Buddha did this. This is just, I trust where I am right now. That's the kind I'm talking about.
I can feel, I mean, again, similarly, it feels very difficult to do that
mm-hmm.
in the face of persistent anxiety and worrying.
Yes, it does.
I mean,
yes, it does.
I often feel like I do not trust
where you are,
where I am
right now.
Okay,
so then one way of trusting where you are right now is to say, I do not trust where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't go anywhere, just stay right there. And that will be, paradoxically, trusting where you are right now, believe it or not. Good practice.
It is something like relaxing into the state that
helps.
In.
That helps.
Very much.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little ceremony of the body you can
uh-huh.
do where it's like, okay, I'm really tense. Maybe take a breath and just let everything go. Close my eyes. That helps. It's really just a ceremonial reflection of what's really going on, but it helps. So that's perfectly all right. Okay, well, I think I've tried your patience enough for one morning, so thank you all very much.